These are the weapons. These are the warriors. And this is the final battlefield. 1990, the Bronx Warriors. They trust no one. They fear nothing. Those who follow them will survive. Those who challenge them will die. It's a future ruled by the strong. A future where the first to perish are the lucky ones. 1990, the Bronx Warriors.
Hi everybody, welcome to Midnight Movie Cowboys. New episode for you, and we are joined by our special guest who was on the Bruce Lee episode with his partner, or his co-host, I should say.
His partner, they're gay lovers.
Yeah. I just said that and I wanted to get away with it.
I'm more of a Mark Gregory kind of man.
Mr. John Grace from Damage Viewing.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
They're all doing good. Better than me anyway, because I feel like shit, because I'm sick at the moment. And I'm joined by...
The guy.
Yeah, what the... Forgot your name for a minute there. Oh, it's Hunter. Yeah.
On Damage Viewing, he's known as Jolly Hunter.
That's right, Jolly Hunter. That's really the best description I've ever heard of him.
He is part of our rotating co-host that we have on that show, because I certainly can't do every episode.
No, no.
Although we're on hiatus as of this recording right now, so...
I just read that. What a shame. Yeah. I'm sitting there looking like every couple of days for the new Damage Viewing. It's like, the Heat is still there as the latest one. I'm like, okay, well, it's a new one.
I decided to put some word out.
We got the request to do Heat, and so we're doing Heat with Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, there was no way in hell we were doing the Pacino movie. We're just not huge fans of it.
Who wants to sit through 2-3 hours of that anyway?
Too much blue light, you know.
Too much blue light.
I'd rather see Burt in his toupee. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually thinking that Lewis doesn't want me on there. He'd be scared off from the Bruce Lee episode. He's like, oh, you know, I don't want that. I'm trying to do my best Lewis impression as well, while I'm doped up on paracetamol. Well, you know, I don't want him on there because, you know, he's going to offend the Hispanics. So, no, fuck him, no. Sorry, Lewis, I'm just playing around.
Oh my gosh.
That's the first time I've heard that.
It's the first time I've ever heard it.
Somebody had to start.
That was not rehearsed. That was definitely a not Lewis there, right for you. An audible not Lewis. All right.
I think I'll have you on simply because he can edit racial stuff. Like, I know that the Heartbreak Ridge episode had to be edited down quite a bit.
I would consciously not say anything offensive at all on there. I would just be like, I have a bullet form of things to avoid saying. It's like, right, I haven't said that, so cross it off.
Yeah. You know, we're America. We don't have free speech here, Stuart. Not like Australia.
Yeah.
I don't think it's so much as free speech as nobody gives a flying fuck, really. It's like, you got a problem, you got to get a backhander.
Political correctness, man. It took over. You
know? Yeah. All right.
It changed everything.
Okay, anyway, enough of that shenanigans. We're going to be talking about a film. I've actually wanted to do an episode on pretty much from this show's inception. I did bring it up on, honey, you remember what episode it was I spoke about?
It was either The Overlooked Hotel or Guilty Pleasures.
The Guilty Pleasures. It's damn not Overlooked, that's for sure. I'm sure it was one of my very high-up Guilty Pleasures. And it's the 99 The Bronx Warriors and its sequel, Escape from the Bronx / Bronx Warriors 2, depending where you live in the world. And this came about from John and I having a yak about, maybe a month or so back, 6 weeks back?
Yeah.
And just saying,
it, and I said, man, I'm totally up for that.
Oh, yeah. And one day we just it came about. It's like, okay, this Bronx Warriors show has to be done. It's just germinating too long in me. So we pulled Hunter away from his Criterion collection and said, look, you know, Criterion haven't yet released this film, but they're going to. Yeah. We lied to you. You understand that. I'm sorry, but
I'm still waiting for my Criterion edition of Castellari's Kaoma. So.
Yeah, we got to pull you away from Sword of Doom and Naked Prey to talk about this. and the Bicycle Thief and Kurosawa's Ran and
Mononcle.
Everything else. Throne of Blood.
Yeah.
Throne of Blood. House.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, House. Houseu. Which the biggest surprise they've released. Really, the only surprising thing they've released in the last few years.
Yeah.
That and I was like, whoa, when they announced Eating Raoul, which came out this week.
Yeah, that's an odd one. But no Castellari. They still have not released anything by Castellari. No.
By the way, that film House actually was retitled here as Shithouse. It's like,
man, you Australians are vulgar when you're posting.
No, I think the board, yeah, the censorship board sat around and said, what's this film? Shithouse. Right, that's the title. Shithouse. Or shit. Or, Shiza Hustle, if you're going to mix German and Japanese together.
Did they pair it with Stork when they released it down there?
No, Stork's a beloved treasure in this country, my friend. Bruce Spence is revered. It's like, it's just like rose petals everywhere Bruce Spence walks.
I finally watched my Mad Max 2 Blu-ray, and I was like, man, Bruce Spence just ruled it.
Yeah, he does. Oh,
I watched that the other day as well. I showed it to my sister and her boyfriend, who didn't know what Mad Max was.
Did they work out why Max was mad?
Actually, no.
No.
It was funny, because I showed them that one. I showed them Mad Max 2. They'd never seen the first one. You know, I didn't really think you needed to, because it kind of feels like a completely separate thing. They were kind of like, what's this guy's deal? Why is he driving around the desert with a dog? Who are these people with mohawks? And I was like, just go with it, you know?
You should have said, see that guy? That's actually, that's Stuart right there. See that little kid with the boomerang? That's Stuart when he was a little kid.
Of Stuart's life, you know? He lives in a giant fort made of tires.
Hunter, did you find yourself repeating the dialogue after you watched it? Going, the right, yeah, he does damage to the core and all that.
Yeah, I was like, I could find a vehicle that could hold that tanker.
Yeah.
No. This is how you say it. 2 days ago, I could find. What was he? I can't remember the line. I've got the accent right. I can't get the fucking line right. All right, never mind Mad Max. Let's talk about Mad Max this time around. We're talking about 99 The Bronx Warriors. Mark Gregory's going to be upset if we don't keep talking about him. Because Lord knows he needs the publicity. No, he doesn't.
Well, that Limey website implied that he's, like, hiding from fan attention.
Well, like, yeah, I read on Wikipedia, and, you know, it's Wikipedia, so I don't really trust it, but I wanted to ask John this. I read that the film star, Marco
Di Gregorio,
a.k.a. Mark Gregory, is, like, missing? He's hiding?
He's hiding, literally. He's, like, he's underground with Dublon, mate. He's, like, literally hiding that.
Apparently he's doing some sort of like Italian version of Tony Robbins or Stephen Covey over in Italy, doing like this life advice or life affirmation or something, you know. Because you need the guy who played Thunder Warrior to tell you how to handle your life. But yeah. And played trash in these two wonderful films we're discussing. But yeah, I you know, he didn't have a long career. He was only like 6 or 7 years. And
but he was
apparently Castellari hasn't even talked to him in like a couple of decades.
Yeah, because there was a YouTube video floating around of a guy who did, like we were just talking about, called The Hunt for Trash. It's an interesting little series. It's not very long. I mean, this guy's diligent. He goes to Italy. He obviously knows the language through somehow. You know, he's learned it over the years. And he's like...
Rosetta Stone, my friends.
Yeah.
Good and segue into sponsor of the show. No.
And he'll go around every house where it's got a Marco Di Gregorio on a little label on an apartment block and just press it and go... Marco Di Gregorio, trash, Bronx Warriors, and he's had no luck. So, I mean, I admire his persistence, this guy, but I'd give up like after about half a day. I was like, fuck trash, I can't be bothered.
It's kind of like that documentary about John Hughes where they go looking for John Hughes, and of course he refuses to see them.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard that one.
Yeah, it's the totally cover of the person with a microphone holding it to an empty chair.
Pretty much.
John and me.
But no, the you know, he only had like a 6-year spread, but, you know, the Italian film scene wasn't really blowing up in the late 80s.
No, it wasn't.
This was the early 80s, though, wasn't it? Or yeah. By the end of his
right,
career.
This was early 80s. This is kind of the end of the Italian production boom. Like, okay, Mad Max, the Mad Max movies were huge around the world. In the U.S., only Mad Max 2 was a hit.
Mm.
But they did, like, great business around the world, so it was easy to do films in Italy inspired by Mad Max and Escape from New York, which really wasn't a huge hit in the U.S.
I didn't think it was.
No, it made like less money than The Sword and the Sorcerer. It was like,
wow.
I think it made like, okay, it grossed like $19 million, and The Sword and Sorcerer grossed like $24 million or something like that. And that was a good gross back then. And
is it true that Sword and Sorcerer outgrossed Conan?
It made more money. Conan only grossed like $26 million, and Sword and the Sorcerer was like $24 million. I mean, I'm just, you know, making these numbers up, but it was around that ballpark. And Sword and the Sorcerer was more profitable and was re-released throughout the year. Like, experience the magic again. The R-rated sort, you know. It came out before Conan, like 2 months before. And it came out again later that year as Conan was hitting, you know, videotape or cable.
It was the Sword and Sandals version of fucking Iron Eagle to Top Gun, right? They just rush that shit out quick.
Pretty much, yeah.
Albert Pyun did a sequel a couple years ago.
Yeah, I've tried watching it. I got through about 5 minutes and I couldn't take it. But there's a cult. Albert Pyun has like a cult of viewers that will watch any crap he does, and I can't. I can't get through most of his movies.
Have you ever seen The Hip Hop Witch?
No. Fuck. He should do a sequel to this to Bronx Warriors. He could probably do it. Shot on video, using people from horror conventions in various roles, and
yeah,
you know, pretty easy. He's like a no budget Rob Zombie in a way.
But could they find the guy who walks like Mark Gregory?
I don't think anybody could. That's
my God, we'll get to that
he's
later.
A human
on.
Centaur.
It was like it's just like there's either something heavily wedged up there, or this guy can't bend his back because. Or he's got a board taped across his back because he is the
he
most...
He does have ridiculous posture.
Yeah, you know what? Mark Gregory should now be in the, what do you call it, encyclopedias with the word Homo erectus underneath him.
Well, is that the rumor is that he was a gay prostitute? Or...
Yeah, apparently. That interview that's on the DVD of the, what was it, the Media Blasters / Shriek Show version they did? It was a 40-minute interview with Fred Williams.
Yeah.
And he didn't say it straight out, but he alluded to it pretty heavily that he was that way inclined.
Uh-huh.
But apparently Castellari didn't find him that way. Castellari found him in a gym somewhere in Rome. And
Castellari.
Castellari found him in a gym.
$5
but then
to suck my dick. Wait a second. Yeah. You've got a face for movies.
Enzo Gay Castellari, yeah.
Well, the IMDb will say his girlfriend submitted his photo to a talent search, but that also says Castellari discovered him at a gym.
So yeah, his like, girlfriend's like some big fat Roman dude with fucking tattoos all over his arms.
Yeah, but he does have a very awkward posture when he walks, and apparently the Hell's Angels they hired as extras couldn't stop laughing at him while they were filming.
The guy's got the most severe case of drop ass I've ever seen on anybody. He's like, for a guy as slim as him, right?
Yeah.
His ass just drops to about halfway to the floor. It's like, there's this tight ripped body and there's these ass cheeks like halfway hanging to the fucking ground.
I don't think he was doing squats or deadlifts, put it that way. They said he was bodybuilding, but he was certainly lacking certain exercises.
Not squats with weights anyway.
Well, when he runs, he runs like Linda Carter in Wonder Woman.
I tell you one thing. Let's get straight into Bronx Warriors. Now, Linda Carter's got more speed on trash than Mark Gregory does. The best ever description I heard of this film was there was a guy. There's a channel here called SBS, which is they play just foreign stuff, TV shows and locally made Australian stuff, and also foreign movies that the other channels just won't touch. Like, they played Sex and Lucia completely uncut, and it gets, you know, like, the in-joke is, you know, if you want to watch something that's good without having to go to a dirty theater, watch some SBS. That's the in-joke around here. Anyway, they played 99 of the Bronx Warriors one night on there, and I can't remember the name of the film critic who was on, and he just, like, he comes on before the show, just talks about the film, and then just you know, they play the movie, but he trashed the shit out of this film. It's like, he made so many jokes.
Hey, everybody, stick around for this film that I hate.
Oh, he pretty much said that, yeah. He just made one joke after another. And he said, the lead character in this film, Mark Gregory, looks like Pat Benatar on steroids. And I just pissed myself laughing when I heard that. And then they played the film. But they actually played the film with its Italian dialogue, not an English dub.
Oh, wacky.
Yeah, I've never ever seen that version around again. I mean, I know somebody had it, like a guy I knew had it, and I've never seen it again after that. But yeah, they played the actual Italian version of it with subtitles.
You can't even do that on the Media Blasters.
No, because I actually tried looking for that when I was playing the film last night. And right. No, it's just English dub only.
Huh.
Mm.
Wow.
There are snippets of it floating around.
Watching it that way.
Yeah.
It'd be more authentic than the actual, what would you say, Hunter, the New York accents?
New York? Oh, man, the accents in this movie that come and go. This is the Bronx.
Oh, my God. But
It's dubbed by those guys who dubbed a lot of Giallos and Spaghetti Westerns. Like, oh gosh, Ed Mannix, who always did Bud Spencer's voice, dubs Vic Morrow, which is kind of sad. Oh,
really? They dub Vic Morrow, really?
Vic Morrow's voice.
Yeah, Vic Morrow is dubbed by Ed Mannix in the film, and Ed Mannix always did Bud Spencer's voice.
And this was Vic Morrow's last movie before John Landis actually accidentally killed him on Twilight Zone.
Completely killed him in Two Kids. And it's funny that Vic Morrow was safer making this cheap Italian film than he was making Hollywood film.
Did Landis accidentally kill him, or did he actually watch Bronx Warriors during a production of Twilight Zone and say, fuck this guy, just run the helicopter over him?
Well, at the time, Morrow's career was pretty much just doing foreign productions and he made money that way. And so, like, Twilight Zone was supposed to be his comeback film after, you know, battling the bottle or whatever. And that was back when cocaine was flowing pretty freely on Hollywood studios.
I was going to say, Vic Morrow had to be drunk on this film. You could just see it. He's just scrag drunk.
Yeah.
it's
weird because it has
especially
Chris
during
Connelly.
His death scene.
Yeah. But Chris Connelly's like in this film, and I can never figure out Chris Connelly's deal because I used to see him on TV on cop shows all the time.
Okay, now who did he play? Was he Hot Dog or was he Ice?
He's Hot Dog.
He's Hot Dog, okay.
Yeah, and it's like, and then suddenly he pops up in a lot of Italian films in the 80s and then dies of cancer, like in 87.
Wow.
And I think he's only like 43 or 42 when he filmed this, but he looks like he's 60. So I don't know if he was just sick or what, but apparently he was on Peyton Place back in the 60s.
Really?
He'd been on the show. Yeah, the entire run, and he was just kind of a washed up, you know, TV star. And doing these films in the 80s, but he pops up in a lot of Italian films. Like he's in the real Django sequel with Franco Nero. I think it's called Django Unchained or something. No, Django Return of Django or Django Strikes Back, one of those. But he's the villain and he has like a gay mincing voice in that film. And I think he dubbed his own voice. He's in Raiders of Atlantis. He's in a lot of Italian stuff. It's strange.
Yeah. Now there's a lot of Italian actors actually in this film, wasn't there? There was only about two or three of the popular, well-known American actors, and it was just the rest were just Italian fill-ins.
And Fred Williamson, who as the Duke of New York, I mean the Ogre.
Ogre.
He was in a bunch of Castellari movies, like The New Barbarians and The Inglorious Bastards.
Okay, stop right there. Now, New Barbarians, John, why was that packaged as the Bronx Warriors trilogy over in Britain?
I don't know. I guess because Timothy Brent is in the sequel, and he's also in Warriors of the Wasteland.
Okay.
Or that's what it's called. That's what it was called in U.S. theaters. It's called Warriors of the Wasteland. And it was like a blatant Road Warrior ripoff. But I can only guess it was because of Timothy Brent.
So it's nothing to do with Bronx Warriors. I'm like,
I don't remember it having anything to do with Bronx Warriors.
It definitely hasn't been Mark Gregory.
Yeah, I was like, Fred Williamson's in both, you know, and he doesn't make it out of Bronx Warriors alive.
Right. He has the Throne of Blood death where he goes.
Yeah, he does. That was pretty awesome.
It's a total tribute. He like puts a cigar in his mouth. You know, he said, "I'm not going to die like a punk. I'm going to die smoking my cigar."
Well, while Vic Morrow laughs maniacally,
right,
like, hands around,
ride my horses or whatever he says.
I love Vic Morrow's death in that movie.
Ha ha ha!
he's just laughing, waving his hands around, and then Trash just walks up like with a harpoon gun and shoots him in the chest with it. I was like, where did he get a harpoon gun?
Now, let's just get this clear. Honey, you've never seen these before, ever?
No, I'd seen it at the video store after you recommended it to me, but I never bought it because it was a little expensive. And
$3.99 was too much.
Too much. And when we decided to do the show, I was like, oh, good, I can finally have an excuse to watch it. But it was on Amazon Instant, and it's free if you're a Prime member, so I just went ahead and watched it.
Yeah. And John obviously had seen it plenty of times before.
Oh, yeah, I saw it on cable when I was a kid. Like, it played on Showtime in 1984. And I watched it, just loved it. Because I was one of those kids that would watch Escape from New York or The Road Warrior every time they aired on cable.
Yeah.
So when they started showing the Italian ripoffs, I was like in hog heaven. And I remember really digging it back then. I was like, well, this has a lot of action. And then when I watched it when I was older, I realized that unlike Escape from New York, the majority of the film was actually filmed in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bronx Wars is actually filmed there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they shot like the Liberty Island stuff was shot there, but nothing else was. Everything else was shot in St. Louis.
I mean, really? One thing I liked about this movie, though, was the location shooting, and it just, to get really hoity-toity Criterion Collection Hunter on you, it just like reminded me of some of those Italian neorealist movies, like with the like the Rossellini stuff, with post-apocalyptic biker gangs. You know,
right.
If Germany Year Zero had biker thugs fighting each other instead of kids running around trying not to fall into the old Nazi ways, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the interior stuff looks like a Fellini movie. Like,
it does.
Using the same sets over at the studios in Rome, but all the exterior stuff is all in New York. You know.
I like the guy who plays the head of the Manhattan Corporation, the Lee Van Cleef Light.
Yeah.
Oh, Floyd Wrangler.
No, that was Henry Silver, wasn't it, in the second one?
Oh, no.
The guy with the mustache, the one he's in both films.
Yeah, he's Castellari's brother, I think.
Is it really?
I think, because I was trying to listen to the commentary, and Castellari was kind of, it's kind of hard to make out because he's speaking in that charming broken English, but he seemed to imply that was his brother.
Wow. Because Castellari's in the film as well, isn't he?
Right, right. Yeah. He plays the advisor, and he's got the dark sunglasses on inside, like he's got cataracts.
And Castellari's daughter is in the film, who plays Anne.
Right.
Yeah. You know that, Hunter?
That's his daughter?
That's his daughter, the one who plays Anne, the one who runs away from the riches of Manhattan to be with the Riders. That's Enzo G. Castellari's real-life daughter, Stefania Girolami.
Well, it's also got George Eastman plays, like, the one of the bad guys. You know, there's many bad guys in the film, but he's
Golem.
He's like wearing he's dressed up like a Shaw Brothers villain.
Yeah, with a big ponytail.
And he's got like the guy's doing karate, wearing the Century sparring gear and stuff.
It was very Warriors-esque with the roller skating hockey gang.
You know? Oh yeah, the Warriors was probably a bigger influence in Escape from New York because
I was thinking of the Warriors immediately, like when that roller skater gang comes out and then the other gang shows up. I was like, man, and then I was like, and then, you know, I was like, I had to check myself. I was like, which one came first? And I checked, and the Warriors was made in 79.
Oh, man, the Warriors came first. It was either about 3 years on this one.
I get my dates mixed up.
What, do you think they're going to get this original?
No, yeah, exactly. But
well,
it happens
the music
all the
is,
time where I go, oh, this is a ripoff, and someone goes, actually, this came first. So I was like, I need to check on this.
Well, even the music is a ripoff of the score from the Warriors.
Yeah.
It's very similar. Clearly, it was the big inspiration. What cracked me up is how unnecessary some of the characters are. Like Hot Dog, I still really can't figure out why he's in the film.
Yeah.
Other than to say, oh, okay, we got Christopher Connolly in the movie.
Yep. You want unnecessary? I'll tell you what. I'll give you unnecessary.
Yeah.
But it's brilliant. That guy playing the drums.
Yes. Yes.
And, supposedly that was like a band that was playing in the area and they just put him in the movie while they were shooting.
One man band on drums? Yeah. I mean, damn, he's a good drummer. Like, the guy's
he's
a good drummer and shit. He's really talented, but like, I'm thinking to myself, you know, you're really talented, but if you want to get yourself recognized, you're on the wrong side of the Hudson, my friend. Ain't no one going to recognize you over in the Bronx.
I mean, that's like the drummer and Taxi Driver on the street corner. I mean, that guy was a dude who was just there. Yeah. Like, because my uncle lived in New York at the time, and he said he saw that guy all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what was his name? Marty Lane in Swingers? were actually a real life jazz duo.
Oh, really?
So yeah, the ones who they go in that jazz that swing club and
yeah,
they're playing Staying Alive, that old couple. But yeah, they're actually a real life entertainment act. But yeah, anyway, yeah, that drummer, I had to get that drummer in because he was like, what is he doing there? Is this dead body with a spike sticking through it? Why is this guy just playing the drums? Is he like a procession band for all the riders turning up? Do you notice the way the riders come in and they park their vehicles in like a W?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like you would physically have to sort of move everybody into a spot to form that W. Nobody parks their vehicle, their bike, like that. It's like, I couldn't work it out. It's ridiculous.
Because we have to let the airplanes know that we're the Warriors, man.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's like the way Trash walks, you know, it adds to the surrealism. It's like when Trash comes upon his cohort who's been tortured and betrayed by ICE. And he has this kind of homoerotic like scene with him where he's like crying for him and stuff, and he snaps his neck.
I don't know, John, is it so much homoerotic as is the Oscar moment?
It could be the Oscar moment. It just came off bad because of...
The Oscar moment is the beach.
The beach, thank you. I was just thinking, there's your Oscar moment right there.
That's going to the awards.
Yeah, it's like, we've got this film. We want to get it, you know, for your consideration. Here's this scene. It's like, fuck off, Trash.
My favorite is Anne's description of the people who are after her. They're unscrupulous, Trash. Oh, my.
I think my favorite moment was when I said, you're going to listen to this twat, and then she goes, no, just 1 minute.
And this film is fucking laughable. It really is.
Oh, yeah. Well, the guy who plays Ice is apparently some sort of anti-apartheid crusader in South Africa.
He looked like Davis Guggenheim. That's what I thought. This guy looks like Davis Guggenheim.
He's apparently become a big. He became a big deal later on. Like, he was a big crusading writer. If you look up his IMDb and Wikipedia, you know, if you could believe all that stuff, he apparently became a big anti-apartheid advocate in South Africa and got apparently was awarded by one of our presidents or senators or something. I think Senator Dianne Feinstein or whatever.
Oh my god!
Gave him an award, and you know, but apparently he had a bit of a Renaissance man or a guy who did different things. But he's dubbed by Larry Dolgan, which I thought was strange because he's an actor from New York.
What he should have done with that boot was fucking protracted the blade out when he met Dianne Feinstein.
Yes. Well, I like that they make a big deal. Like, you know, a lot of these guys seem to carry a lot of weapons, but it's a big deal when, like, Hot Dog hands him a Luger. Here you go.
Yeah.
You know. Ooh, a Luger.
I thought that was
big
funny.
Deal.
In both of these movies, there were a lot of German guns.
Yeah, which
was like a Mauser in the second one.
Yeah, it's probably the best props they can get in Italy, if you think about it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Guns aren't rampant, so it's like, okay, we got these left over from World War II movies, so let's use a Mauser and a Luger.
One of my favorite guys, one of the favorite writers of the extras, was the guy, the motorcyclist with the hook on his hand. It's like, you ain't hitting that fucking brake pedal with that hook, my friend, or turning the fucking throttle either.
Probably one of the Hell's Angels, probably.
Oh, yeah.
God. What about Leech? Do you guys like Leech? Leech. The chauffeur? For Freddie Williamson?
Oh, yeah.
How you doing, Chase? Where's the Olga?
What got me was the...
was so fun.
Yeah, with the gang that looked like Broadway dancers.
Oh, that was the worst.
Like
with the chick with the silver top hat and shit?
Yeah.
Yeah, the black lady?
Yeah.
Right.
That just made me think of when Snake goes to the Broadway club in Escape from New York, and everybody's sitting around watching those people put on a show.
No. That reminded me of we have to get our own Lynn Thigpen for this film. Let's get a black lady with short hair and big lips. And stick her in a silver top hat. The Warriors had it. We can have it as well.
Well, they wanted the baseball Furies, but they wanted like the Broadway Fury type thing. And so they're like tap dancing.
No, but I think my favorite gang of all were the ones who dressed like old Jewish maids or old Jewish housewives, the scavengers, who run around with those rags and those things on their head and too much makeup.
What are they called? The
scavengers, the ones who kill Trash's friend.
Yeah, like I thought it was funny. Another thing that reminded me of Escape from New York was like they had these really soft versions of the Carpenter stings whenever they'd pop out of the walls. Yeah. Like, it would go... Like, whenever somebody pops out in Carpenter's movies, it's like...
Yeah.
You know, what this one, it was like a really soft, like...
What they did was go, they got a guy with a guitar and said, plug this shit in, just play a sting, will you? That'll do.
But yeah, I remember when this movie came out, it was released by United Film Distributors in the U.S., which was like one of the strangest companies, because they would release things like Kentucky Fried Movie and Dawn of the Dead. Like, they would only release a movie every 2 years. They did a lot of the George Romero stuff in the 70s.
Right.
Well, so when they imported this film, it's like they... I remember it being released, but it didn't get like a huge release. But I've talked to friends of mine who did see it in the theater when they were kids.
My God, I've never seen advertised anywhere for a theater.
One of them is friends with all the big rap DJs.
Oh, well, there we go.
Yeah, but he saw it in I think Tacoma, Washington. Some theater showed it. So how strange.
Now, well, I first saw some video as well when it came out in 84, we got it. And, you know, actually released both that and Bronx Warriors 2 was Columbia Pictures.
Wow.
Yeah, over here. Really? Yeah, so it was like a general release. Yeah, I remember seeing the front cover on the VHS tape and just thinking, I think my brother's actually still got both those tapes as well at his house. I've got to ask him. It's like, he's a real sentimental sort of guy. He's just like, hang on to that shit forever. It was like, me, I'll just toss the tape.
He wasn't happy that we were talking smack about Game of Death on this show.
Oh. Yeah, he knows, but, you know. I explained to him, look, you know, it is what it is. Game of Death is shit. You're going to have to accept our opinion for what it is. It's shit. You know, I'm sorry, superimposing Bruce Lee's face on an extra. No, not having that. But yeah, I first saw, like, I saw the cover and stuff, and I thought, this looks awesome, because I was about 12 or 13 when it came out. Like, here's this billy big ripped guy screaming with guns in his hands, and then you watch the film and you think, that's not the guy from the cover. Even at a young age like that, I worked out, that's not him. And as I watched it last night, I'm like, this is ridiculous. This film was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I love it.
It was one of those movies that would have made me wary of film covers. Like, as a kid.
I mean, I love this film. I still love 99 The Bronx Warriors. Always will. Not a great film, but I still love it. But
it
trash
has a,
is...
It has a charm to it.
It's got a charm to it, but...
I will say, like, I watched this movie by myself, and I was like, I'd be enjoying this movie a lot more if I had some friends with me and we had a case of beer.
Well,
I
what
mean,
do
like,
you...
You know, because that's the kind of forum... I like for a movie like this. Watching it by myself, not so much.
I tell you what, but that's where you messed up, because you didn't have Barbara Bush with you.
I know, Barbara Bush wasn't with me.
You didn't have your pet doggy Barbara Bush.
No, but...
best name
me,
for a dog ever, Barbara Bush. Late,
Barbara Bush and I are going to watch some movies.
Well, when I saw this as a kid, what people forget is, like, back then you didn't have movies... released all summer long based on Marvel Comics and DC Comics. So the idea of a movie that looked like a comic book was actually pretty unique.
Yeah.
Sure.
And a lot more exciting than you would think today. Looking at it now, you'd be like, oh, big deal. But back then, this was like a live-action comic book, like a Heavy Metal, something out of Heavy Metal or,
right.
You know, 1984, one of those, you know, alleged adult comic books.
But that's what was really so cool about Warriors was that, like, I mean, and this is before Walter Hill made it really obvious with his director's cut. That was a movie that was really framed like a comic book and looked like one, like, you know, the DJ's mouth coming into frame.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and, saying, and people forget.
Hey, everybody.
And back then, stuff that was based on comic books was, like, a shame to be based on comic books. Like, it was like the Spider-Man TV show with Nicholas Hammond or it's like
Albert
the most...
Albert Pune's Captain America.
Yeah, it was like really unexciting stuff where they were almost like ashamed to show you the hero and his costume and everything. We're making a mystery, you know, that happens to have Spider-Man.
I was so starved for anything Marvel Comics. I watched the Albert Pune Captain America movie so many times on VHS.
Oh, I've never seen it.
Is it the one with Captain America 1 and 2 from the late 70s?
This one was from... When was this one made? It was from the 80s, I think, and it was funny. It came out theatrically in Europe, direct to video in America. Take that, Captain America. Not good enough for your own country.
Not the one with Red Brown?
No, it's the one with Matt Salinger, son of J.D. Salinger.
The author? Good Lord.
Yeah. The guy who played Captain America was J.D.'s son.
Okay. All right. We better get to the plot of this. I mean, we've talked about, we've reminisced about how much, you know.
Wait, there's a plot?
Yeah, like VHS, there is a plot somehow in there. Now, from what I could work out, it was, there's rival gangs, is the Tigers, which is run by Fred Williamson, or aka the Ogre, and his gang, and the Riders, which is Trash and his gang. And one of the Riders gets killed, isn't it?
Yeah, one of the Riders he's impaled on the
stick with and the drummer's there, yeah. Then the Tigers turn up. Yeah.
So we can cut rhythmically while they come in.
The Tigers are blamed for it, but it's obviously set up by the Manhattan Corporation. Now, the Manhattan Corporation is a company who wants to basically irradiate the Bronx, just get everybody out of there, clear the whole area, and just restart again and just build all over it.
They can make money off the backs of the poor, man.
That's it. And so what they do is they set each other up and they pit each other against themselves to pretty much wipe each other out there without them having to do it. But they get wind of it and join forces, if you will. And the Manhattan Corporation to send in Hammer, played by Vic Morrow. Now, I actually like Vic Morrow in this film quite a bit.
Especially, yeah, I liked him up until the final scene where it was like, who is this? Like, this is the badass killer. He's just standing there laughing maniacally until he gets killed.
What I took away from this film was, with Vic Morrow's character, was Jennifer Jason Leigh needed some new toys. So it's like, let's make this film get some money.
I mean, I love his character's introduction, though, with the black hobo drinking the Miller High Life. Hey, man, you got a little bit of Colby?
It's been so long.
He just walks in with this package, and there's one of the Riders is having sex with his woman in the stairwell, and he's like, "Hey man, moving, you're dead.
Sting,
dead. Stay where you are, and you're dead."
It's another sting.
He whips out a shotgun and blows him away.
Yeah. Really camp. That was really camp. I was just saying, it's just like he's like real highbrow camp, that sort of stuff. And then they actually, Hammer leaves there. The black guy starts becoming belligerent, saying, "That's my fucking love letter." It's like, Jesus, man. Ain't that love letter coming from you?
Used to be a respectable neighborhood.
Yeah. And then Hot Dog's character is sent in. Like you were saying, John, it's just really no point to him at all.
No. It's just like we need to have like these grizzled American actors in the film. So let's just give Chris Connolly a role just to have him so we could have his name on the poster.
And yeah. I love Italian movies when they do that, when they get like, you know, an American actor or something that's like washed up. But what's even better, this movie doesn't do it, not to my knowledge anyway, but when they get the sibling of a famous person and stick them in there, like in Fulci's Zombie, we get like Tess Farrow in there, or like this, I think there was some movie called like Rico the Mean Machine or something.
Mm.
Oh, with Chris Mitchum.
Yeah, it had Robert Mitchum's son in it.
Chris Mitchum.
Well, he had a he actually had a pretty vibrant film career in foreign countries at the time. He was the first, I think, Caucasian lead in a Hong Kong movie. Like he did movies in Asia. Yeah, he worked over in Asia a lot, and also in Italy, because you know they were making a lot of action films, and it helped have Bob Mitchum's son, and he wasn't going to get much in America other than like a walk on, you know, Emergency or Adam 12 at the time.
The thing is,
so
as well,
like,
with,
okay, I'll go to Europe and star in something like Charles Bronson did, and that's how Bronson built his career. So that's how a lot of these guys did it.
Yeah, I mean, like they go in the back door, you know.
Yeah, but the thing is with Charles Bronson, he just walked onto a set. They didn't say no, like Chuck Norris. He just walked and he said, "I'm in your movie. Okay, you're in."
He would say, "I'm gonna do this picture." You know?
What's the movie called? It's no longer called that.
Have you ever seen the episode of The Simpsons where they go to Bronson, Missouri?
Yeah. This ain't over. No dice.
Hey, Ma, how about some cookies?
But get back to Bronx Warriors. When I was watching this and I was looking at, there was a conversation between Hot Dog and Hammer. Yeah. I thought, you know what? If you ever remade Bronx Warriors, you know, who would you think would automatically slot straight into Hot Dog's role? There's only one guy who can do it. Who's a scraggy-looking, off-his-head actor who'll take any part?
Jay Baruchel.
No.
Mickey Rourke.
No.
Gary.
Gary Busey.
Gary Busey.
Yeah, it is kind of the Gary Busey role.
Yeah.
Who later did movies with Fred Williamson. He did like a buddy cop comedy.
It's not an actor Gary Busey hasn't worked with. It should be 6 degrees of Gary. It'd be like 1 degree of Gary Busey, really.
Yeah, he was. It's funny because I remember in the 70s when he was supposed to be the next big thing.
Yeah,
Buddy Holly story. That was huge.
In that film, Straight Time with Dustin Hoffman, he was fantastic in that.
Yeah, he did a comedy called Fooling Around, which I think was a bomb. And that was kind of like his career just went landslided after that.
Buddy Holly story was a good film as well.
Yeah, it is
that's
good.
When he acted.
He was a great villain in Lethal Weapon, too, I thought. Mr. Joshua.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Bronx Warriors. So Hot Dog turns up, and after that, it's just a bit of a mess. It doesn't really go anywhere. You know what did find with this film? There wasn't a great deal of action. Compared to 2?
Oh, 2 is wall-to-wall, like, carnage.
Yeah.
2 is this one long
there's
gun
a
fight.
Lot of, like... There's a lot of, you know, Fred Williamson-esque fisticuffs where, like, Fred Williamson does some moves on some people he does in movies. But, you know, the second film is just full of gunplay. This one, it's mostly like, you know, I'm going to elbow you with my spike.
Yeah, and the Fred Williamson karate and then the chick witchy who has, like, a whip. And
I thought that was hilarious.
He calls a good-looking woman like that, big, tall woman, you know, good-looking. Calls a witch. Stupidest name ever.
I wish I had seen the movie like before I talked to Fred Williamson like about 10 years ago.
Oh, really?
I would have had so many questions for him at the time. He was at the Chiller Convention, which was the big horror convention in the New Jersey, New York area.
Nice.
And I went up to him and I just said, Hammer, you know, like I've always known him. Because he was like, acting all cocky and charging like $50 for autographs and stuff.
Jesus.
But people only knew him for From Dusk Till Dawn at the time.
Because
that had just come out like the couple of years before. And I just went up to him. I said, hey, Hammer, when are this... Universal going to release That Man Bolt on video. And he just suddenly, the smile left his face and he looked down at the ground and it's just like he does Bronx Warriors when he's dying. And he had an unlit cigar that he kept putting in his mouth. He goes, man, it's in a vault somewhere. They don't even know what they got, man.
He crawled over to a chair and lit it up and died.
Yeah, practically.
He was From Dusk Till Dawn was my introduction to Fred Williamson, and then I started watching movies like Black Caesar and stuff.
Yeah, as I said, you hadn't seen Black Caesar before that?
No, I mean, because, you know, I think I got introduced to Black Caesar through my African Americans in film class, but I saw him in From Dusk Till Dawn, and in the Full Tilt Boogie thing, he was talking about his film career, and I was like, man, this guy's been in a lot of movies.
The football player, man, as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But then, like, I found out about Black Caesar and Larry Cohen films, and so, you know, started watching those.
I used to see ads for his films when we had a theater that played all the black action movies. They weren't really called blaxploitation. They were just the action movies starring,
Blactions.
You know, Fred Williamson and Jim Brown. And you would see these really cool illustrated ads in the newspapers in the early 80s and even late 70s, advertising all the Fred Williamson movies, because like, they'd re-release Mean Johnny Barrows like every year. So I said, man, I can't wait to see those. I bet they're pretty cool. And of course, then when they came out on video and I could see that they weren't really as good as the posters implied.
Mean Johnny Barrows is on DVD for like 99 cents at the stores over here.
Oh, yeah, you can get it anywhere.
Yeah.
We go from the firing line to the welfare line or the unemployment line. It has all these, you know, we're mean to the vets type of messages, especially the black vets. It's just a goofy, you know, those films are slower and drearier than you would think. They weren't really fast paced.
No.
But because he was shooting them on like hardly any budget, non-union, you know.
Yeah. But Fred Williamson did break one rule here that he never ever broke. He died on film. Yeah.
But he had to have a cool death.
I suppose, you know what, if anybody's going to die, that's about the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Crawl over to a chair, stick a cigar in your mouth and just pass away.
Well, he's died in movies, but he died at, died, quote unquote, at the end of Black Caesar, only to be brought back in Hell Up in Harlem. But
there you go.
He died in From Dusk Till Dawn, too, but he had a cool death.
Yeah, the thing was, work was drying up by the time Dusk Till Dawn came around. It's
true.
You're dying or you're not being on the film. Yeah, Ham will die this time only. That's it. Never again.
But, he was a. It's funny because he was a big dude in person. And one thing I always hear from football fans is, "Oh, the football players back in the 50s and 60s were small guys." I'm like, no. Obviously, you've never stood next to Fred Williamson because he's like a giant.
Yeah,
he's a big dude, and was still in great shape, like in his 60s, and just ageless. I mean, you know, just a healthy dude, I guess. But
yeah,
you know, not torn up like a lot of football players you see now that can barely walk. But yeah, he was a cool dude in person. It's just I had to bum him out because I don't know. I wanted to see that man bolt, and then it came out on video like the next year.
He goes, "You want an autograph? It's $100 for you."
200 white plate.
Ruined my day, motherfucker.
But he had a super ego. Like
really?
Oh man! In the yeah, I know that's surprising. There was a Q&A I went to, and somebody asked him who he looked up to in the '60s, and he said, "I looked up to myself." Because he's like,
God.
Martin Luther King was in Malcolm X were assassinated. Ali was kicked out of boxing. I only had myself to look up to. It's like I was my own hero, and I was like, "Oh wow."
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you could tell in Full Tilt Boogie that he's very impressed with himself, though.
Oh, yeah, he loves himself. And Jim Brown kind of makes fun of him in his autobiography.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was getting onto Fred for dating nothing but white women. And then Fred was like, "But black women are too mean, Jim." So, by the way, if you can get a copy of that book and read it, by all means do.
All right. Anybody got the other thoughts on 99 the Bronx Warriors?
It was...
Hannah, tell us what you took away from it, Ian, because this is the first time you'd ever seen it.
I mean, you know, I think I would have had a better experience if I was with friends.
And, so you would have had a better experience if you were blind drunk?
Not blind drunk, okay. No.
Because you and your friends could pretend
blind drunk.
You and your friends would pretend to be the vacuum cleaner and the gumball machine, making jokes
yes,
about it.
Yes, we would.
Yeah.
Your
no, generation.
Not really. No, we just, you know, like to, you know, like, you know, back in Memphis, my friends and I would, you know, have a few beers, watch like Hell Comes to Frogtown and laugh it up, you know?
Right.
I wasn't crazy about it. I liked the look of it. I liked kind of the economy of filmmaking in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I dig the stuff it's drawing on, like Escape from New York and The Warriors and Mad Max and all that. But, you know, the sequel, however, I thought delivered in spades.
Really?
I loved it, yeah. I mean, well, I didn't love it, but I had a blast with the second one.
See,
the first one, you know, it kind of dragged for me a bit, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was like the beach scene is gold.
God.
And
Vic the Marley Bronx is no
like,
man's
I
land.
I kind of wish the acting talent had held over for Escape from the Bronx.
Are you putting down Henry Silva? How dare you?
Oh, sorry. He's good.
What did you take away from watching it again, John? The first one.
Watching it again, it's I love the scope photography.
Yeah,
I like the live action comic book feel. The fact it was actually shot in New York. I love the dubbing because I have grown up listening to those voices and trying to identify the different dubbers who, you know, like Ed Mannix and Larry Dolgan. So I like hearing those voices again. It's like old friends. And
yeah,
the you know, I kind of, even though it's derivative as hell, I kind of enjoy the unique Italian viewpoint, which is the German weapons and the fact that the finale is basically Nazi type soldiers on horseback. With flamethrowers.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is such a great concept.
There were a lot of shots of flames coming towards people with their hands up in the air.
Yeah. Exactly.
I did think,
you know
what?
Burning.
If I can get James Cameron to fucking post-convert a 3D film instead of Titanic, can you please do 99 The Bronx Warriors?
No, please.
Yes. One thing I've got to ask, though.
Yeah.
One quick, because I started to pick apart the film, and you, I don't know, when I start picking films apart, I'm getting bored.
Right.
Right.
You have
how,
a problem with the aspect ratio.
How did the horses get onto the Bronx? Did they take them in the helicopters or some shit today? Where did the horses
yeah,
come from?
They didn't have that transition shot, so it needed that.
See, Castellari, but... you missed the a pivotal scene of... of
by the way...
What?
The Viking funeral?
Oh my god.
Had, did anybody get... Big Lebowski vibes from them throwing the ashes into the lake and the ashes not making it to the lake.
it wouldn't be unlikely knowing the Coen brothers. Their taste in movies does run pretty wilder than you'd think.
There's a couple more whys I had to ask. And one of them was the thing that Hunter just brought up was, how did those bodies manage to burn so fast into pure ash? Because I'm guessing it's like a real-time sort of sequence.
Yeah.
So they set them on fire, and in about 30 seconds, they're pure ash. There's nothing left. There's not a bone to be seen anywhere.
Yeah.
And also that ash, I'm sorry, would be fucking hot instead of just picking it up and scooping into a jar or whatever it was.
Hey man, they're tough Bronx warriors.
Yeah, they're tough, all right?
It's just a little life it's like is burning tough a cigarette in
the
in your
Bronx.
Hand.
And okay. the biggest why I've got, and please someone answer me this. After they free Anne from the zombies, who the fuck made that cake?
I was wondering the same thing. Where they got
that cake was fucking. It was like the size of my house. It was enormous. Where's the bakery in the Bronx? I can't see nothing there.
Is the cake boss nearby?
Caterers were clearly not run out of the Bronx when the criminals took over the area.
Yeah, but they just found out she's gonna be made the president of the fucking Manhattan Corporation when her father dies. They made that cake in what, 30 minutes? That's
the apocalypse doesn't mean that culinary skills are lost.
Yeah. More like it was fucking made of radiation. It's probably like a 1/10 scale size originally.
Well, what I love is it's supposed to be, it's promoted as being a post-apocalyptic film, yet there's a very civilized New York.
Exactly.
Like, right across the water.
Exactly. That was a point I was going to get to, was like, you go over the river, it's supposed to go apocalyptic. You go over the other side, it's completely civilized. It's just...
I love the guys in the helicopter flying around. Look at them. Just cockroaches, man. We ought to just nuke the whole place, man. Look at them. And I'm like, look at what?
It's like, nice green trees. And
there's some cars down there. It looks like it's doing all right, man. What are you bitching about?
If I had been in a helicopter and I had seen trash running, I was like, nature's done enough to this guy. Fuck him. Just leave him alone. Don't kill him. He doesn't need no mercy death. Just leave him alone.
Well, just the sight of the Trade Center, of course, has its own creepy vibe.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Hey, and they were funny, right, though. It was still there in 1990.
Yeah. It was dead on accurate.
This was filmed in 82. But yeah, I'm saying, you know, you're saying it was set in 1990. That's right, yeah. Oh, well, Bronx Warriors.
The 1990, I remember.
Yep.
Okay, Bronx Warriors, done. That was filmed in 82. 80, what was the next one? 84?
83.
83, really?
Yeah.
Well, I tuned it out 12 months later.
Right after, I think.
Wow.
It came out like 18 months later, I think.
Jesus.
From New Line Cinema, oddly.
Yeah, this was back when New Line was putting out really awesome movies. Like that.
Well,
they were
re-releasing the Texas Chainsaw Massacre annually. And they would, through that theatrical circuit, they'd put out stuff like Bronx, Escape from the Bronx. And then they'd also put out Warriors of the Wasteland, which was New Barbarians.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when that played at local theaters. So that there was New Line Cinema had a nice little, you know, exploitation movie circuit before they became pompous and made those movies about the little guys in the ring.
Oh, with the big feet,
yeah. I think Freddy Krueger kind of built that company into
a
mainstream
studio. He made them all their money.
Man, I thought it was Pink Flamingos made them the money.
this is the house Divine built. But Enzo G. Castellari comes back to direct.
He's back on board.
Yeah. So. I want to see Escape from the Bronx on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Well.
Man, you liked that film this much, did you?
Okay. I didn't, like, let's put it, I'm not going to, it's not a respectable piece of cinema, but I had a blast watching it. I mean, because I was just like, wow, they're blowing up helicopters with revolvers. Actually, anything they shoot with a pistol explodes.
And a shotgun.
And a shotgun, yeah. Just anything, like a helicopter comes after trash and they're shooting at him, and trash just is like fires a couple rounds off into the air and the helicopter just lights up. You know?
See, I was actually kind of bored by Bronx Warriors 2.
Oh man, I don't know. It was just like, it was like Conquest of the Planet of the Apes or something, where it's just like wall to wall, like just urban crazy warfare.
I should have had Ricardo Montalban telling trash, no.
Huh? Austin Stoker or somebody coming in.
No.
But in fact,
better if the cops were had ape masks on instead of those helmets.
Well, what cracked me up was they still were using New York locations. It's still shot in New York and the exterior.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And but at the beginning, they're like forcing the residents out to move to New Mexico.
Oh.
And I'm like, why would they resist? New Mexico is great.
Exactly what I thought. I'm like, get me on the bus.
This is our home. What, they want us to move to New Mexico? Who wants to live in New Mexico? I was like, have you been to the land of enchantment? It's nice.
It's like civilized people, not New Yorkers, obviously.
Okay, cool. getting to that, it's that sequence of trashy parents refusing to, well, the father refusing to move.
Yeah.
The greatest fucking bit of background image ever, the poster of trash on a wall.
Say the same thing, and like when you meet them, you do not know that this is Trash's parents.
They had to specify this is Trash's parents.
They have a poster of Trash on the wall. Like, what is Mark Bullitt of the Bronx? Like, what's going on?
They've got a Beefcake poster of their son on their wall. Blown up.
I was like, oh wait, it's his parents, but it's still a goddamn poster.
What does
he do? Any poster of their child on the wall.
Look at the pecs on my son Trish.
I mean, I've got 5 kids. You know, and my house is riddled with photos of our kids. There's no posters of them, though.
Clearly, you're lacking something, and that's awesome.
Especially if they look like Trash, it would be putting a wall-sized poster up of him.
If like, my Trash, it'd be
fucking
like,
ridiculous.
My son is dead to me.
Oh my god.
The drugs and listening to the rock and roll.
My son leads the riders. He's a good kid.
He's a good kid.
And the thing was as well, with I remember my brother telling me all the time about the poster of Trash on the Wall. When I watched the movie this morning, I just looked at it, I fucking cacked up laughing hard. It's like, there's that damn poster my brother was telling me about. Oh man. And it, actually they got another voice, another actor dubbing Trash this time on Mark Gregory.
Yeah.
And it's even worse than the first one. Because this one sounds like, who's that actor from the 40s? You see, hey? We're going to go like this, hey? We'll go for the front door like this, hey? Look, it's kind of like Mo Howard. Look, like an angrier version of Mo Howard, it reminded me of.
Were you thinking of, what's his name? Edward G. Robinson?
Yeah, Edward G. Robinson. That's a little style I went for with Trash's voice. I'm going to push these balls off and shove them down his throat.
Well, the funny thing is, supposedly, according to the IMDb, is he couldn't. Like, Mark Gregory had not been working out, didn't have his physique from the first movie, so he keeps a jacket on the whole time.
Really?
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, he takes his jacket off at the end, but it's like, it's all distant shots. But apparently, he just didn't look as ripped, so Castellari was like, keep your coat on.
I wonder why he walked around with a jacket when it's blazing hot out in the fucking Bronx. He's got a jacket with him.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently, it was because he just hadn't been maintaining.
What they did was they got the water gun, the squirt bottle, and squirted his body sort of so I can get some sort of abs out of him, or the baby oil. You're looking a bit soft there, Marco.
But Henry Silva, who was pretty much a standby Italian B-movie actor at the time, who I always thought was a pretty major talent, but the American film industry doesn't
11.
Have... Yeah, they don't have much of a... They didn't have a lot of spots for Henry Silva in the 80s, so he has all these great roles in these different crazy-ass Italian movies like The Last Match, where have you guys heard of this one? A football team is recruited to go save a girl who's held captive in a third-world prison.
This sounds awesome. What is this?
So, like, it's called The Last Match, and Ernest Borgnine is the football coach.
Oh, of course he is.
Yeah, and Henry Silva is the warden of the third world prison, who's violating international law, keeping the girl locked up there. So they take the football team in to go rescue her. And I guess Italians assume that football players are some sort of elite soldier because they're like kicking footballs as weapons and wearing the shoulder
pads. Sounds like Shaolin Soccer.
Please tell me this film has got Wilfred Brimley in it just to complete it as being totally awesome.
Unfortunately, it doesn't.
No. Well, it's got Borgnine. It's close enough.
It does have real football players in it, who I think were a lot of guys who were in the USFL at the time, but they're like, it's football players using Uzis and MAC-10s. And in one scene, a football player kicks a football into a helicopter and it blows up.
That's nearly as ridiculous as that. What was that damn Muhammad Ali film we did that was 3 hours long? Freedom Road. Thank you. That was the one.
Freedom Road. Okay. I remember that being on TV.
Yeah. The TV movie from 79 it was. Gideon Jackson. I mean, that's almost as ridiculous as that with that last match game film, whatever it was. But Bronx Warriors 2, I mean, I was kind of bored by it. I mean, I found myself looking away and doing other stuff instead and sort of turning back. Because it was just like, it was like wall-to-wall action, but it just there was nothing there. It's like, okay,
what?
There's flamethrowers and there's, you know, Trash's parents getting killed at the start was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was annoying. And, oh, we get another Oscar moment from Trash when he's, I like the fact that Trash goes to his parents' house, sees his father dead, just looks down, and sees his mother's like, he's in total shock.
Well, the just the concept of people resisting wanting to move to New Mexico cracked me up. What I know, found...
This is stupid.
Well, the it shows what Italians know about America, but or Casolari knew about America, but the other odd thing was this movie came out before RoboCop, and it actually has a very similar plot to RoboCop in that the corporation wants to remove all these people. Or it's closer to the RoboCop sequels, wants to get all these people out of the slum and pave over it and rebuild it or whatever. I don't really see what the problem is with that. That's actually happened in the real world. We're going to make this
Trash is like, he's like that arms guy's like, what do I get out of it? And Trash goes, the Bronx is going to be exactly the way it was. And I'm like, oh, great.
A shithole.
This is like, just what we need.
Technically, Trash is the villain, as far as I'm concerned. And
I agree.
Gee, what's wrong with urban renewal? And you know, ooh, evil white guys. The other thing is, it depicts as a young kid played by Timothy Brent's son, who is killing adults repeatedly. He's a dangerous kid. Grenades, and I have the British DVD, which restored some scenes where he shot some soldiers that was cut out in some markets, like it switches to a different
print.
Yeah. And apparently this was censored in a lot of other versions. And so the kid's like killing adults with a gun. And, you know, in RoboCop 2, there was a killer little kid.
Yeah.
Frank Miller wrote. So I actually felt like Frank Miller had seen this movie when he was writing RoboCop 2 or the original script, because the similarities are pretty striking.
And we got there. No, Antonio Sabato is in this film, isn't he? Senior.
Yeah, Senior had a huge career in Italy in the 70s and 80s doing like Eurocrime movies with Henry Silva doing the crime dramas.
Okay.
Especially Manhunt, which is great.
Okay. But clue me in, because unfortunately with the Bronx Warriors films 1 and 2, they weren't wise enough to put who played who. They just said, and starring, blah, 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 and that was it.
Right.
So they didn't actually say who was who. So who was Antonio Sabato in Part 2?
He was the gang leader who gets shot at the end.
Dablone?
He's a weird outfit. Yeah, that's Antonio Sabato. Timothy Brent was playing the father of the killer kid who was helping Trash. It was almost like a buddy film for the second
half. Strike.
As far as as far as the action goes. And then, you know, Silva just comes kinda does the Henry Silva routine. Like, what does he say? Like, don't put sugar in my drink or whatever. Sugar makes me crazy.
Like,
I was wondering if Silva just improvised that dialogue just to be funny, because I've seen him interviewed on DVDs and he's a really funny guy. He hung out with Rat Pack and everything. So he probably thought some of the stuff he was doing was ridiculous.
He probably knew the film he was doing was ridiculous.
Like, taken aback by that, I was like, "Whoa!"
Yeah.
That just seems like a really knowing moment. Like, this is such a silly fucking movie. I'm just gonna have fun with it.
Yeah,
yeah.
But the character I found the most superfluous in this one was the woman, the activist.
Yeah,
there was really no point for her. I mean, good looking woman, but I mean, that was about it.
Yeah, it was funny because it was like the reporters crusading and discovering the great corporate conspiracy to move people to a better place and.
But then they shoot her and she's dead and that was it. There's nothing more said about her. There's no sort of loose ends tied up.
Yeah, it came off like they just had the actress for maybe a couple of days of shooting and then had to get rid of her character or something. It was really strange. Like it's funny because the movie is not structured in any way where there's like a romantic lead or anything.
The movie's not structured, John, at all.
Yeah, it doesn't have any structure. There's no second or third act. It's like an entire first act of a film.
I was actually glad there was no chick for Trash to hang out with.
I'm with you there.
Of probably some good Oscar speeches, but
I'm with you there.
It just kind of kept the movie going for me.
Because after the first one, like with Anne, when she goes, Trash, hold me, and he holds her, and he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. It's like, this guy's never been with a woman before in his life. I can see it right now.
Right.
Yeah,
concerned with his way more romantic about his friend dying than his woman. you don't get the great Trash speeches. You don't get a lot of the those just really weird artsy moments. Almost like Castellari could have just handed the film to his second units and hardly shot anything at all. He probably shot the Henry Silva stuff and everything else was like second unit work.
Yeah. I mean, and Trash actually had less dialogue.
Castellari's like, I just was hired as a to direct that. He felt like 1990 The Bronx Warriors was his, that's me as a director. The sequel is just something I directed for money.
Oh, man. That's weird because I thought this was so much better. Even though it's a piece of shit, I still liked it.
Because it's just endless carnage.
It's just endless craziness, like just running through this ruins of New York, just blasting people. And right, then Henry Silva's saying crazy shit.
And then
you know,
cutting back to civilized New York, which is with traffic. And
I know. When the crazed journalist got killed, I thought that they were on the same island that Popeye Doyle cornered the killer in, the heroin kingpin in French Connection at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It looked like
which,
it, didn't
for
it?
For all I know, it could have been. You know, yeah.
Now, John, what was your description of Henry Silva in this film? It was a classic when I read it.
I said he looked kind of like Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney in the silver suit, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like Mitt Romney in a silver fascist suit or a silver jumpsuit or whatever. And I was actually wondering if anybody who specializes in Photoshop meme jokes is just to do a vote Romney 2012, but have a shot of Henry Silva from this movie. Just to see if anybody catches it. So
yeah.
Mitt Romney doesn't eat sugar, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, I'll bet. We know it's banned by his religion. Or is it just caffeine? I forget.
There's not much I can really say about Bronx Warriors 2. I really was, I would say, underwhelmed by it because I knew it was actually not very good to begin with. But yeah, I was actually just kind of bored with it because the one I'd seen least, I'd seen Bronx Warriors 1 way too many times. 2 I'd seen maybe about 5 or 6, which is not much compared to how many times I've seen Bronx Warriors, which has to be hitting up around 20, 25 easily. No, I'm serious. I'd seen it that many times. It was a joke.
I've only seen it about 4 times, so I feel totally underwhelmed, you know, by my own my viewing of it. But yeah, I watched Escape from the Bronx twice, actually. First time, I was kind of bored by it. Second time, I enjoyed it more because I was picking apart the details. And I was like, wow, they've got a young kid, like, killing adults in this movie.
Yeah. Like, that's the kind of stuff I loved about it, was just how nuts it was. There's, like, kids lobbing grenades. There's, like... Just like I love how they're like we're keeping this quiet, like we're relocating people and blah, blah blah, and they have like death squads like with the with logo on the side like annihilation squads.
Yeah,
you know that.
Yeah. Like I was like, they're not doing a very good job of keeping this under wraps.
Well, exactly. Buildings blown up and helicopters. You can't really keep that quiet.
I love the buildings exploding were very Toho-esque. I was expecting Godzilla to come and knock them over.
They were more like Daiei with the Gamera type effects. they weren't up
we're
to
not
a Toho.
Get Toho credibility.
A weekly Tsuburaya TV show with Ultraman probably. With Baltan, you know, knocking it apart.
And my favorite moment from this movie was when I guess it was Trash who was running or somebody was running, and these two cops go, "Look, he runs like a look at how he runs. He's a fag," and then they explode.
That actually reminds me of in 1990 Bronx Warriors. Hot Dog uses the I have a friend who has seen these movies a lot, and I'm not naming him because he used the expression fag face. And I was like, where did he get that insult? Was that like common in his elementary school in the early 90s? And then I watched Bronx Warriors and saw Chris Connolly or heard him use the phrase fag face. I was like, oh, that's where it came from. That might be my favorite insult of all time.
So now Bronx Warriors worked its way into the modern vocabulary. Great.
Christopher Connolly probably improvised the line for all I know. But yeah, I was like, wow. So yeah, the dialogue is pretty amazing in these films when you watch them a second or third time. And just cool.
But the great thing is as well about these films is the fact that the English is so broken that they don't understand what they're saying. I mean, they know what they're saying, but... There's no real care factor. Like, there's no sort of care taken to the fact, well, we might upset this group of people or we might upset this group of people. It's like, fag face, it sounds all right, let's put it in.
Well, there was no taboo about using those words back in the early 80s.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There was no, you know, Archie Bunker could say it on TV. There was no political correctness about that stuff. And then everybody's become hypersensitive where, you know, everybody's acting like...
When I was a kid, fag became a no-no.
Right.
Like, because I just remember one day it was like, oh, no, you can't say that. Like, because, you know, me and other friends would, you know, we'd call each other that, just rib each other. And then one day it was like, can't say that anymore.
It was like the Monster Squad. But in college, for me, it was like in college was where that word became taboo and they were trying to get rid of it. And nowadays people act like if they hear a word they don't like or a racial or sexist term that they'll go to the emergency room if they hear a word. So I just find it all pretty silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, American pop culture's got an extremely thin skin. And something I've always joked about on Damaged Viewing, but it's pretty true, as I said, that mainstream network television in America is completely aimed at women and gays. And then Lewis would correct me and say, well, Hollywood's perception of what gays are, you know, like an Amos and Andy stereotype of them. And you know, other than sports, it's pretty true. You know, there's no show like, you can't watch something like The Rifleman or, you know, there's not a man show anymore. There's no Bonanza or some.
Well,
Charles
ever since Adam Carolla and Jimmy Kimmel went off, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, but that's cable. Like, you can do these shows on cable like Justified and aim at that male demographic. But major network television, there's no degree of anything for men.
I found that line as well. I remember that line. Keep filming the fag face and I'll rip your fucking head off.
Yeah.
After hot dog kicks ice in the face.
But really, it's like, you know, it's an industry of wimps, you know? It's like, nobody has any credibility.
Let me point you guys towards a website that's out there, bronxwarriors.co.uk.
Yeah.
You know of it?
I looked at it. That's where I saw the recent photo of Mark DeGregorios.
What do you reckon? Do you reckon it's him or not?
It looks like him.
You reckon?
I had my wife look at it, and I said, what do you think? And she wasn't 100%. And I actually had to freeze frame scenes on the movie where he's making an expression.
As a comparison.
Yeah, he's very expressionless in the in the movie for the most part, but like, okay, there he is smiling, sort of. Maybe that's him. And the jawline and the eyes look like it could definitely be him.
Is it the picture of him? He's got the goatee that's a little too manicured.
That's the one.
Right. He's like smiling real big.
Yeah.
He looks like he'd play like the evil pawn shop owner in a movie now.
Yeah.
who has the info for the hero, but I think it's him.
Well, he looks very happy these days.
Yeah. Clearly there's no Italian film industry for him to care about, so you know.
I mean, is Italian, let me ask you this, John, because I've been thinking about this a little bit.
Yeah.
Is Italian genre cinema just completely fucking dead?
Yeah, it's dead.
I mean, because, like, you know, Dario Argento hasn't made a good movie in fucking forever.
Yeah.
You know, his movies are complete shit now, and they look like shit.
He doesn't, like, I think he's nuts. I think he just doesn't care.
Like, any Italian movie, like, have you seen the stuff on Dracula, his Dracula movie?
I've heard it's hideous. Like, it's
It looks laughable. Like, it makes Giallo with Adrian Brody look fucking fabulous. I mean, in that movie, I couldn't make it through. It was terrible.
Dracula, I said I would have been excited if it were 1977.
Oh, if it was 77, that would be the greatest Dracula thing ever, you know?
And then I posted this on Facebook, and then the president of Smogvale Records said, yeah, but imagine the scenes of Asia Argento we're going to see in the movie. Oh, and I'm like, have you seen her lately? She looks like a Mort Drucker drawn version of her dad.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
She's not aging well. You can, and she talks like Joe D'Alessandro, so it's like, you know, she's hotter. Really,
if you really want to see some naked Asia Argento, there's some older movies with plenty of that.
Scarlet Diva? Oh, yeah.
Scarlet Diva.
It'll be on Rewind. She looks great in that, but she looks great in Phantom of the Opera, which is the only reason to watch it, where her dad basically puts the camera right on her ass.
Right, Phantom of the Opera was painful.
Oh, it's awful.
But,
beyond belief.
But, like, you know, it's just like I don't see any Italian genre movies anymore. Like,
okay, so our final thoughts, Bronx Warriors. I enjoy them. First one, second one, I will have to rewatch again to get some sort of enjoyment out of it. I was kind of bored this time around. I don't know if the fact that I'm sick and I'm not feeling the best kind of didn't help. Don't know, but I do want to see it again. I mean, I own it, so there'd be no problem there. Would I buy it on Blu-ray if it came out? Yeah, definitely. For sure. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll get one soon.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go. Let the guest go next.
Yeah, let's get John's final thoughts.
Oh no, I I enjoy both movies a lot for different reasons, because they're two very tonally different films, but I think they're enjoyable as hell, and man, I just love post-apocalyptic Mad Max ripoff Italian cinema. Like, I actually think After the Fall of New York is probably a better movie than either of these, but right. Like, I think yeah, you should see
it. That was kind of Children of Men, wasn't it?
Oh, Children of Men totally ripped it off.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, like, I mean, you, when everybody saw Children of Men, they were like, this is After the Fall of New York.
Yeah, mm. And Children of Men's a very inferior film to After the Fall of New York, as far as I'm concerned. Starring right. that international criminal in Playboy, Michael Sapkew. Oh, right. I should add in this joke that a friend of mine, David Zello, and his like writing friend Paul Cook came up with a prank where they came up with a fake third Bronx Warriors film that they reviewed in their book, yeah. Tough to Kill, called Bronx Crackdown, and they claim that like it starred Mark Gregory and Mauricio Merli was like kind of a hammer type character, except he was disguised as a milkman with like milk grenades in his milk truck. And the whole movie was fake. Like, it was a whole fake synopsis and everything. And apparently some scumbag video bootlegger in England claimed he had the film.
Wow.
But it's over at my mom's apartment. You know, he's one of these jerks who published like the Jalo papers or one of these lame fanzines and sold bootlegs. Mm-hmm. But he claimed that he owned this film. And I think there was another fanzine guy who claimed he had it too. But they
John,
really thought it existed.
John, you tend to keep company with a lot of people who do a lot of fake stuff.
Fake
Paramount.
Fake Paramount, yeah. That was a good one.
Well, yeah, I don't know. it was like a fandom in joke, and people thought it was real. And apparently every now and then you'll have people who claim they have Bronx Crackdown. Well, the movie
but it
is
sounds
completely
like,
fake.
It sounds like the synopsis, though, is brilliant because it sounds like it could be real.
Yeah, it was convincing enough. It's like
they didn't go too far with it. It's not like, you know, then Trash and some dude have butt fuck each other in an alley,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's a convincing write-up, and they even created a fake poster with images from different 80s Italian films kind of.
Nice.
If you Google Bronx Crackdown, I think some postings come up for it, so
nice.
Something to check out on Google.
What about you, Hunter? What did you take away? Do you enjoy them both? Or just the second
yeah, I
one?
Enjoyed them both. I mean, I was kind of bored during the first one, but I mean, I will say I was probably not watching it under the best circumstances. I'll probably watch it again at some point. It's on Amazon Prime, so I'll probably check it out again. But I had a blast with the second one. It's a crummy movie. I think MST3K did a riff on it.
Yes,
actually.
I was just about to bring that up. I've actually got that one as well. And I'm not much of a fan of MST3K at all. I actually find it quite boring, but I need to get that version to watch it. And yeah. It was okay.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see their version of it. But, you know, I had fun watching the second one. Is it a good movie? No, but I had fun with it anyway.
Yeah, did you find it a bit of a stretch to get through both?
Not really. I mean, neither of them are long movies particularly. You know?
Okay, let me subject you to this possibly down the line. And we want John back on for this. John, what do you reckon? All three Thunder Warrior movies?
Oh, if I can find them. I have the first one on VHS.
They're on YouTube, the whole lot of them. They're all there.
Are they? Oh.
Yeah, they're all there.
Oh, sweet.
Now, Hunter, if you think getting through the first one was a stretch, my God, man, Thunder Warrior 1, 2, and 3 will feel like about 8 hours long each.
Yeah, no, it's
fucking bad
Mark
movies.
Mark Gregory is Billy Jack, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So
oh, no.
Three more Mark Gregory's films to get through. And they're bad. I mean, they make Bronx Warriors look like The Godfather, really.
Well, they were supposed to be directed by Castellari, and instead they were directed by one of the De Angelis brothers, and the producers of the Bronx Warriors movies.
Oh, Fabrizio, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he did it under the name Larry Ludman, and he is not the talent of Castellari or Sergio Corbucci or somebody else who could have actually done a good job with it.
Someone who can frame
a
film.
Corbucci.
All right, well, that's it. Bronx Warriors.
Yeah, see it. If you're in America, grab the Media Blasters DVD of 1990, The Bronx Warriors. And in England, there's the Shameless DVD, I believe is the name of the company.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got the yellow casing, and they have a uncut Escape from the Bronx with like the scenes of the little kid, you know, killing people with a gun.
Yeah.
So, that are banned in every market. So who would think that one day England would have the most complete copy? Because they used to have the toughest censorship.
Yeah,
They've certainly maxed out a lot. All right, let's get into the plug time. Let's go.
All right, John, where can we find you?
Yep.
DamageViewing.com has all the links and has our latest episodes. And when we make our big return, that's where they're going to drop. So you can find links to my Twitter page and Facebook page on there.
Excellent.
And check
out the show, please. Yeah, Hunter's on there, and Stuart will be on there in the future, we swear.
Even if
the Lewis oppression makes the final cut.
No, he's not coming on, no. But, he's going to fucking kill me. He really is going to kill me.
We hope to have Stuart on a future show. And, we've got some big stuff planned. I think it's one of the best podcasts out there. I say that with total pride and ego, Fred Williamson style.
Yeah, I was going to say Fred Williamson
check
style.
Check it out.
Do you have an unlit cigar in your mouth right now, John?
As a matter of fact, I've got a pack of natural lights that I just kind of keep unlit.
So, awesome.
Would you like a flamethrower with that?
Yeah, exactly. That's the way I want to die in a movie. But,
and by the way,
yeah.
John asked for $75 for an autograph. Because he's more a man than what Freddie Williamson will ever be. All right, let's get our plugs out the way.
All right, you can find us at MidnightMovieCowboys.com, Twitter at MMCowboys. You can find Stu and I on Facebook. Go like our page where we need more likes. And remember to participate in the Movie Trading Club. So
Yes.
So our new next one is... I Saw the Devil and Give My Regards to Broad Street. So go watch those because that'll be our next show.
You know what? After that Wings tweet you put out last week, Give My Regards to Broad Street is going to seem like a fun adventure compared to what I really had lined up for you.
Oh.
I was going to give you one called Paul McCartney Really Is Dead, The Last Testament of George Harrison. Which is this fan fiction made documentary that's up on Netflix where... a guy is recording a voice as George Harrison, supposedly in a London hospital bed. And he talks about how this guy named Maxwell from MI5 tried to cover up the death of Paul McCartney. It's the most ridiculous thing ever. I thought, do I give you that or just make it a bit easier and give my regards to Broad Street? So I gave you that one instead. But had you gone on about Wings any further, you would have got Paul McCartney Really Is Dead documentary. It's fucking hideous.
Ever again.
Propose that for Damage Viewing, Stu. I think you and Lewis should do that if you can get on.
What's that? Paul McCartney Really Is Dead.
No, Lewis is like a major Beatles fan, so it could be fascinating.
He really will hate me forever after this show, but he'll want nothing to do with me after watching that. It's bad. It is a horrible documentary. Oh my god, that guy doing George Harrison.
I don't know, man. Lewis, I think, has pretty strong skin when it comes to shitty movies, you know?
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, you know, the Halloween 2 episode almost didn't happen because he knew I hated the film, and he was actually telling me I didn't have to come up to Fort Collins to record it because he thought it would turn into a big argument.
I would have done that with him because I actually like that movie.
Yeah, but I was like, but dude, it'll be a good episode because I hate it and you love it.
I know.
It. You know, that's
why y'all did a great episode with it.
And I think that might be our best episode if you want to just get an idea of what the show is.
That is a really intense episode.
But getting quick because it'll disappear from the feed soon.
Well, hopefully we're going to have everything archived where you'll be able to listen to the older episodes.
Yeah, it would be good.
Good.
Check out the Golden Age.
Yeah. All right. That's it for this time around. Signing off as myself, Trash.
I'm a hot dog.
That's Hammer.
Adios.